Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. This is your host, Cindy Sheehan, and we're on Green 960. Today, we're going to have a very special show about single-payer health care. I believe that health care is a basic human right, not a privilege for the robber class. Everybody in not only America, but the world should be able to access health care. We'll be talking to two activists and advocates for single-payer health care, Clark Newhall from Salt Lake City, who's a doctor and a lawyer, and Donna Smith, who is also an advocate for single-payer health care, who was in Michael Moore's movie Sicko. So when we come back, we'll be talking to Dr. Newhall. This is Cindy Sheehan. This is your Soapbox, and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. If you would like to keep your voice on the air, and you feel this show is important, please contribute now. Go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com. That's CindySheehansSoapbox.com. The phone is 562-912-5860. That number again is 562-912-5860. Please help us keep this show on the air. Your generous contribution is appreciated.
Hi, this is Seth Fowler with One Struggle, One Fight. From March 25th to 29th, queers and allies are marching from Richmond to Sacramento. That's right, we're walking all the way to Sacramento. We are marching for same-sex marriage, health care for all, economic justice, gender equality, and racial equality. The march was initiated by One Struggle, One Fight in the aftermath of Proposition 8. Our goal is to build bridges to other communities and movements for justice. We are gay, straight, bisexual, HIV positive, intersex, transgendered, and gender nonconformers. We are secular and people of faith. The March to Sacramento will kick off with festivities in Richmond the evening of March 24th, and we will begin walking the next morning. We will stay in communities along the way and join with them to celebrate our diversity. We will arrive in Sacramento on March 29th and make our voices heard with a day of action. Walk the entire way with us or meet us along the route. Support us in whatever way you can. Join us in the streets as we stamp our message into the earth. Sign up today at OneStruggleOneFight.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox here on Green 960. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and remember, you can always reach me at Cindy@CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Our first guest, like I told you before the break, is Clark Newhall. He's a doctor and a lawyer. Wow, that's a lot of school. And he is also a single-payer healthcare advocate. He is a supporter of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and he was a supporter of my run against Nancy Pelosi. I was 100% behind single-payer healthcare. I definitely would have co-sponsored and advocated for House Resolution 676, which was introduced by Congressman John Conyers of Michigan. And I would have also been an advocate in Congress working with Congressman Conyers, even though he's been somewhat of a nemesis to me since he wouldn't impeach George Bush. This is an issue we could have really worked together. And I have been to hearings in Washington, D.C. with him on this subject. So in the new Congress, 111th Congress, H.R. 676 for single-payer health care has 35 sponsors. And my first guest, Clark Newhall, is going to tell us about single-payer health care. When I sent out an alert that I was doing a show on it, many people don't even know what that is. Welcome to the show, Clark.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, thank you for being here. And please tell my listeners exactly what is single-payer health care.
Well, single-payer health care is a pretty simple concept if you rid yourself of the notion that insurance has anything to do with health care.
Right.
If you get that out of your head, first of all, then single payer is easy to understand. Single payer means that there is one payer for all health care. That is, the payer collects the money and disperses the money. There are no government-owned facilities necessarily, but the payer is the government. And we have an example of single-payer health care in the U.S. It's
right.
Medicare.
Exactly.
Medicare is single-payer, at least was single-payer health care until Bush and his cronies in the health insurance industry decided to bring HMOs into the mix and by the way, pay them a 12% premium over what it costs Medicare to take care of patients. But basically, single-payer health care means privately delivered health care, private doctors, private hospitals, but publicly financed so that the government, in the version that John Conyers is sponsoring, collects through payroll taxes the money that's necessary to pay for health care. And everybody gets health care as a matter of right.
And there's examples of this all over the world, isn't there? Not in what we would think of communist or socialist countries either, right?
All over the world, there are all sorts of single-payer and multiple-payer systems that mean that involve the government as the arbiter of how it works. In Canada, the system is a little bit different because each province administers its own system under a budget that's created by the national government. But the national government collects the money and distributes it to the provinces who then divide up the money among among the providers in accordance with whatever scheme they have in that particular province. In England, there's a different kind of system in which the government collects the money and then pays the money out to either physicians employed by regional authorities called trusts, or to hospitals that are, you know, the main portion of the trust, or to physicians that are employed by the government. And that coexists in England with a somewhat different private sector healthcare. But most people in England, and not most people, all people in England, and pretty much, and all people in Canada, if you were to say to them, well, I'm going to take away your national health care scheme, you would have a revolution the likes of which we couldn't imagine. It would be similar to what would happen in this country if you were to say to seniors, oh, well, we're going to take away Medicare.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't want to do that. You would have the seniors after you en masse.
Well, not only, like you said, did George Bush mess up Medicare and stuff, it also is very narrow who qualifies for that kind of system. Please explain the difference. Some people are confused also, like, what is the difference between the VA healthcare system and a single-payer system?
Really good question. The VA system is classic socialized medicine. That is, that government, in this case the federal government, owns the means of production. And in the VA system, all doctors and all hospitals are owned by and run by the government. Speaking of which, the VA system is widely considered among people who know something about this to be the best medical care system in the U.S. and the only one that's instituted a system-wide electronic medical record. Now, I know that there's been a lot in the press about how bad things are at Walter Reed Hospital.
Right.
And that has sort of been used to tar the VA with that brush. But if you know anything about it, you know that Walter Reed Hospital is not run by the VA.
Exactly.
It's run by the Department of Defense.
Right. It's for soldiers who are currently
in
active
service.
Duty. Right.
And this is something that people don't know very well. The particular unit that was the subject of all of the news reports a year or so back was being run by none other than your friend and mine, Halliburton,
under a
private contact from the government.
Right.
So that if you want to blame screw-ups in military medical care on somebody, you should blame it on Halliburton and not on the VA.
Well, I have many friends who are vets, obviously, in my line of work, being a peace activist, and most of them are very pleased with their contacts with a VA system, their healthcare system. Again, though, there's different degrees of how you are able to access that, depending how whether your percentage of disability. So I think that's kind of inhumane too to classify people that you're only 30% disabled when they can't work or earn a living.
Some people cannot. Cannot afford the care at the VA because they're charged for it not being, over a certain percentage of disability.
Right.
And that's the beauty of a single-payer system. The slogan for the single-payer system is everybody in, nobody out. So basically, the single-payer system covers everyone. Now, people are all going to say, oh my gosh, isn't that so much more expensive? Well, no. In a word, you save money because you cut out waste. What waste am I talking about? I'm talking about the 31% of every dollar that goes into healthcare. Every dollar that goes into healthcare is wasted on administrative costs because of the system of 1,300 private insurance companies that we have.
Right,
think about it.
Right.
Not only do the insurance companies have to go out and sell insurance and have to have utilization reviewers and have to have data entry clerks and have to have CEOs who have to have a living wage of, a couple $100 million a year and, that sort of thing. But you also then require doctors and hospitals to have humongous billing departments. For instance, I recently read that in one large hospital, the number of billing clerks per patient is higher than the number of nurses per patient.
Because
they have to bill multiple insurance companies, that wastes money.
Right.
A single payer system is so simple because all you do is send in the bill to one entity. And oh, by the way, Medicare ranks as paying claims sent to it accurately and promptly 98% of the time. The next best competitor in the private industry is Aetna, which has had something like 80%. So doctors will get paid quicker, faster, more accurately, and they won't have to have a huge staff of billing clerks to handle the billing.
Well,
they can do it themselves.
Let's talk about where in this economy that is hemorrhaging jobs, where would those people go?
Great question.
If we switch over to single payer and we cut out the middleman of insurance companies, we'll be right back after a short break. Please stay tuned. This is Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Green 960.
Hi, this is Seth Fowler with One Struggle, One Fight. From March 25th to 29th, Queers and Allies are marching from Richmond to Sacramento. That's right, we're walking all the way to Sacramento. We are marching for same-sex marriage, health care for all, economic justice, gender equality, and racial equality. The march was initiated by One Struggle, One Fight in the aftermath of Proposition 8. Our goal is to build bridges to other communities and movements for justice. We are gay, straight, bisexual, HIV positive, intersex, transgendered, and gender nonconformers. We are secular and people of faith. The March to Sacramento will kick off with festivities in Richmond the evening of March 24th, and we will begin walking the next morning. We will stay in communities along the way and join with them to celebrate our diversity. We will arrive in Sacramento on March 29th and make our voices heard with a day of action. Walk the entire way with us or meet us along the route. Support us in whatever way you can. Join us in the streets as we stamp our message into the earth. Sign up today at onestruggleonefight.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Green 960. Our show today is Pay or Die Healthcare versus Single Payer Universal Healthcare. Our guest is Clark Newhall. He's a doctor and a lawyer and a single payer healthcare advocate. Clark, if my listeners want to get a hold of you, can you give a website that they can access?
Absolutely. It's a social net site for single payer activists that I set up, www.onepayer, that's numeral one, PAYER.net. And there you can sign on, add your blogs to our stream, stream our activist alerts, which go out, nearly every day if I get up, And
you're very busy being a doctor and a lawyer.
Well, yeah, but I try to send out an alert every day and look and see what the issues are all about, with simple answers and with videos of various people talking about single-payer health care and what it's about.
Well, with all my research into single-payer health care, and like I said before, I supported it when I was running for Congress and against Nancy Pelosi, who does not support it, and Barack Obama does not support single-payer health care. They support a universal health care, which would force people to buy health care and maybe give some tax incentives for that or whatever. But I have seen statistics where most doctors are in favor of a single-payer system where they can actually treat people instead of worrying about getting permission from an HMO or a PPO or whatever to treat the person and not have to worry about, you know, being reimbursed for that, or not have to really worry about the almost 50 million of us in America who are uninsured or underinsured. But we talked about before the break, all the people that are in the healthcare industry, which is a powerful lobby in Washington, D.C., and that's one of the reasons that my opponent, Nancy Pelosi, was not for single payer. She gets a lot of money from the healthcare industry. But where would the workers in the billing departments in hospitals or in doctor's offices or in practices or the health care field, what jobs would they have?
Well, that's a good question, Nancy. First of all,
Cindy, Nancy, don't call me
I'm
Nancy.
Sorry. Oh my God. Okay, that's a good question, and the answer is twofold. First of all, in the bill that supports single payer, H.R. 676, there is a provision to provide income to those people up to $100,000 a year for 2 years if they lose their job because of the enactment of single-payer health care.
Wow, that's a sweet deal.
That's a pretty sweet deal. Now, you know, I'm sure that won't be enough for the CEO of Blue Cross and WellPoint and so forth, and I feel so bad for
them. I know,
them.
Me too. My heart's breaking, just like it breaks for those Wall Street CEOs that are only going to get $500,000 in bonuses.
Yeah, poor guys.
I know.
But the regular people, the regular Joes that make up to $100,000, if that's a regular Joe, will be able to get that for 2 years while they're looking for a job to replace their insurance company job. Now, the other thing is more important, though. Actually, there's two more things. First, all of these people you're talking about are information workers. Even the lowliest data entry clerk in a doctor's billing office has skills that are valuable in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that it would be very difficult for any of these people to get a job in something similar to what they're doing already. On top of that, all of these people have skills in negotiating the healthcare system in
right.
one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to replace the healthcare system. The healthcare system will still be there. People will still need help negotiating the healthcare system. They just won't need help negotiating how to pay the multitude of bills that come from each individual insurance company and the explanations of benefits and the crazy verbiage that is written into the contracts. They won't have to negotiate that. Third thing is, insurance companies won't disappear. Health insurance companies won't disappear. They'll still be around. It may well be that, in fact, it almost certainly will be the case that there will be insurance companies offering what amounts to a Medigap plan, similar to the Medigap plans that are offered for seniors now, to cover things that are not covered by expanded Medicare.
Well, it was a really in H.R. 676, it seems very comprehensive.
Yes,
what
ideally
is
it should be very comprehensive, but
mm-hmm.
no doubt there are going to be people who will want to have, say, I don't know, a liposuction, who will want to have cosmetic surgery, who will want to have a private room if that's something that's not covered,
mm-hmm.
who will want to have things that are not necessary, or people who will want to have treatments that are not approved by the overarching medical entity, the sort of Federal Reserve Board of Medicine
mm-hmm.
that decides what's basic health care and what's not. There are certainly going to be companies that will make money doing that kind of thing.
And then, of course, for the what I like to call the robber class, they'll be able to access private doctors and medical care and stuff
no,
like that.
Yep, no doctor would be precluded from accepting Private patients for any, patients that are paid for through a private insurer. There may even be a market for doctors who want to do nothing but privately paid rather than Medicare paid.
Well, there for patients. Sure, there for sure is a desperate need for people to be covered universally with single payer health care. It's not, to me, I don't think it's a luxury or a privilege. I think that it is definitely a basic human right to be able to go to the doctor and be healthy. There's so many people I know who have full-time jobs and their diets are exemplary. They don't smoke, they don't drink, they exercise, they don't take risks because they don't have health insurance.
Right. And that's wrong. I mean, it's wrong to tie our health care to our employment. I mean, we should be, especially in this economy, we should be thinking about a way to make health care recession proof. We shouldn't be relying for our health care on insurance companies, for heaven's sakes. Imagine if AIG, if the health insurance companies had engaged in the shenanigans that AIG or Lehman Brothers did. And who knows? Maybe they have. Maybe they have. But certainly tying your health care to your employment is a silly idea that has long since outlived the usefulness it had during World War II, which is when it was invented as a way to get more people
right
into the economy.
Well, and then, some people who are insured, they still have problems accessing health care that would, benefit them.
Absolutely.
And that's just another scandal here. In America, which is supposed to be a first world country where health care is really only for, is a privilege, not a right. So I know that HR 676 is very expensive. I think the tab is about $1 trillion a year. One thing that it doesn't address, which I think would be a cost-saving measure, is if we have single-payer health care, we wouldn't need a VA system. Because everybody would be covered,
correct,
and we could save that amount of money.
Exactly. In fact, HR 676, has provisions in it for gradually phasing out the VA system, reducing, Medicaid. You don't need Medicaid because everybody's covered.
Right.
You don't need SCHIP, and you don't need the states to be involved in deciding whether they're going to fund SCHIP and Medicaid or whether they're going to fund a new parking structure for the legislature, which is
right,
what happened in our state.
Right.
The states aren't involved. It's a federal government entity that takes care of all of the bills that come into it and collects all the money. And the cost for it, for the average family, the cost is less than the average family pays now for health insurance premiums. And the cost for the average employer is less than the employer pays now for health insurance premiums. So who are the economic losers? The only economic losers are the employers who are not now buying health insurance for their employees. And they will have to pay a payroll tax, which is greater than the payroll tax that they're paying now.
Right.
But what are they going to be providing? They're going to be providing their employees with health care.
And what about the people who do not have jobs?
People who do not have jobs, if they're self-employed, then they're going to be paying self-employment tax just like people do if they're, well, for me, for instance, I don't have a job. I mean,
mm-hmm,
I pay myself.
Right.
And so I pay a self-employment tax.
Right.
And my self-employment tax would go up. But you know what? The amount of self-employment tax I would pay would be far less than the amount of insurance premiums I pay, far
right,
less.
Right.
I'd save several grand a year by paying the tax and getting decent care that cannot be taken away and cannot be, pre-existing conditioned out of existence.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. 20 minutes goes by super fast. But, Clark, I want to thank you again for being on my show, and please tell my listeners your website again.
It's www.onepayer.net.
Okay, great. And, of course, you can always get a hold of me at Cindy@CindySheehanSoapbox.com. And this is a conversation that we need to keep and to the forefront. It can't be pushed aside. We really have to fight for this, even in this economy, even with the Congress we have that Only 35 people have signed on to support this resolution. So anyway, Clark, thank you so much for being on, and hopefully we can talk to you soon. And thank you for supporting the show also.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. This is Cindy Sheehan, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. We're going to take a short break and come back and speak with Donna Smith from Michael Moore's film Sicko. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. If you would like to keep your voice on the air, and you feel this show is important, please contribute now. Go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com. That's CindySheehansSoapbox.com. The phone is 562-912-5860. That number again is 562-912-5860. Please help us keep this show on the air. Your generous contribution is appreciated.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here on Green 960. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You can get a hold of me always at Cindy@CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Our next guest is Donna Smith. Donna Smith is a community organizer for the California Nurses Association and national co-chair for the Progressive Democrats of America's Healthcare Not Warfare campaign. She was also featured in Michael Moore's film Sicko that was about healthcare, the horrible state of healthcare here in America, and alternatives to that. Welcome to the show, Donna. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for having me on and for talking about this subject.
Oh, it's a very important subject. And like I was talking to you about with Clark, our previous guest, about, I really supported it, and I support the California Nurses Association. They're super radical, and they're super committed to this, and that's because they're committed to their patients, and they're committed to people getting the health care that they need. And to me, in America, it's a shameful just what sickness really on our in our society, that so many people go without health care or have experiences like you had with our system. If my listeners haven't seen Sicko or they haven't seen it lately, can you remind us about your experience and how you ended up in Mike's movie?
Sure, absolutely. We're one of those 250 million people that Michael talked about in the movie who always have had health insurance. We always made it a priority. We never went without it. In fact, there were times when we had to scrimp on other things in order to have enough
right.
to make our health insurance
right.
bills. And when my husband got sick in his mid-40s, he's a tall, slender, athletic guy, but his family has a lot of terrible genes for artery disease, and he ended up having his first coronary bypass surgery when he was only 46 years old.
Wow.
So that kind of started our dive into kind of chronic illness conditions. He's now had three heart surgeries and bypass surgery on one of his other arteries in his belly, and lots of problems just generally with his arteries. And that was really started out in about the early 1990s period. And like most families, even though our health insurance was expensive, we were still able to manage it. It came through our employers, and our copays and deductibles were there, but they weren't horrible. They weren't consuming so much of our income.
Uh-huh.
But as the 90s went on, that started to drift. And I think that was true for so many of us who had insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, the premiums would go a little bit higher. And every year, it seemed like the coverage was shrinking a little bit more.
Right.
So the deductibles were higher. And then I finally, at the very end of the 1990s, I was diagnosed with uterine cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like a double whammy mm-hmm. for us in terms of health issues. So we had this acute chronic thing going on, and then my emergency situation. And by that time, our insurance had grown to the point where we were paying almost $400 a month in premiums, and the coverage was was really quite terrible. We had a $5,000 maximum out-of-pocket, which eventually soared to a $9,000 maximum out-of-pocket every year. I always tell people I even loved the language of it. It was called a maximum out-of-pocket exposure. You needed a law degree to even understand what it was you were buying. So knowing that, I tell people this is a part of the story Michael wasn't able to tell in sicko because he couldn't do everybody's life story. But we also had Aflac disability insurance and a health care savings account. So we weren't leaving ourselves, we thought, open to financial disaster.
Right.
But Larry got sick one year in 2004 in December. We racked up that $9,000 maximum out of pocket. That calendar year tipped over, and guess what? When your benefit year tips over, so too does your clock for racking up that deductible again.
I think your story is really resonating with many, many of my listeners who, if they haven't had this kind of thing happen to them, they know somebody who's had this kind of thing
happen
to them. So I'm sorry for interrupting you. Keep going.
It is. And I tell people the reason Michael had us in the movie was not because we were unique. Michael put us in the movie because we were not unique, because so many American families are in this position. So by the time we got to the point of having more than $20,000 in medical debt, which doesn't sound like an awful lot, except for a middle-class family, we do what we're trained to do as middle-class people. You hang on. You hang on by your fingernails. You do everything you can to keep from going broke. You borrow from friends. You borrow from family. You do that to the point that they almost hate to hear from you on the phone because they don't know are Donna and Larry calling for money again.
Right.
And sometimes we were calling for money again.
And, you know, this is what's so terrible to me is that it's not bad enough that you're sick and you have to go through that, but now your loved ones are avoiding you.
Exactly.
And, you know, to add money problems on top of these illnesses is a disgrace. And if we had single-payer health care, that would be at least one issue that we wouldn't have to worry about when we were sick.
Absolutely. So, you know, in the midst of all this, I would sit up late at night, and here I was still receiving some of my follow-up cancer care, and I was writing for I was an editor of a small newspaper in South Dakota. And a friend called me and said, you know, Michael Moore's working on this movie about healthcare. And I said, yeah, so what? I said, you know, what is that supposed to mean to me? You know, I can barely keep Larry alive. We're writing at midnight. I'm writing at 5 in the morning. I'm dead tired. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. And so I basically told my friend to go away. Well, a week later, God love her, she called back to see how Larry was doing. And I said, all right, you know what, just to shut you up, I'm going to go on Michael's website, and I saw the little blurb that said, send us your healthcare horror story.
Right.
And I typed into it. I said, you know, while you're working on this fantastic movie about healthcare, why don't you talk about what's happening to all of we middle-class people out here in the country that are carrying health insurance? And I never thought I would hear anything. And about 6 weeks later, I got an email back from a producer and started a months-long conversation about our situation. You know, I often hear people, because now I've spoken in 39 states and the District of Columbia about health care reform, but I always ask people, how many of you have heard disparaging things about Michael Moore and his ability to tell the truth? And, you know, hands go up all over the auditorium, and I say, you know, we had too. We're not and so unlike you, but I went through this vetting process, you know, that was enormous. We had to provide medical records and credit reports and bankruptcy papers and all the things that we had to provide in order for them to know that our story was what they wanted to hear. And still, we didn't hear from them. And in the meantime, that damage does not stop just because Michael Moore showed an interest in you.
Right.
The financial trauma keeps happening. The health trauma keeps happening. And I finally called them at one point and said, you know, I don't know what you're doing with this movie, but we're going under. We're having to move. We're losing our house, and we're having to move in with our daughter. And we have nothing left, so here's what the contact information will be. They called me back about an hour later and said, can we come film that? Well, and I said, I don't care. And they did.
And I just want to verify what you said. You know, I know Michael. I know his staff. And they are very rigorous in checking their facts. And you can't say, you know, if you agree with Michael's politics or whatever, you can't say that he is not telling the truth. And his movies and what he says are based on fact, not based on fiction or some kind of abstract theory, that's for sure. But it's really good to also tell people's stories, like your story.
Yep.
I think one of the reasons that my story resonates with people is because I've experienced a loss. And, you know, I can speak out of that and not just, you know, be a pundit who has no personal. And we met, Don and I met also in, was it West Virginia? Where did we meet?
Yeah, we did.
Was
we
it
met
West
at Radford.
Was it Virginia?
Radford University, yeah.
Virginia?
West Virginia. Yeah.
Oh, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay. So I, we don't
felt
have a lot
of kindred spirit in
yes,
that.
Yes, very yeah. much so. And we've both been to Cuba, and we've both experienced the healthcare system in Cuba. I had, when I was in Cuba, I had an illness, and it was a chronic thing, and I was treated I only went for a few hours. You were there for quite a bit longer.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to have to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what you're doing in Washington, D.C. What is the debate on healthcare in D.C. right now? And we'll give my listeners a chance to find out how to get a hold of you. This is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Seth Fowler with One Struggle, One Fight. From March 25th to 29th, queers and allies are marching from Richmond to Sacramento. That's right, we're walking all the way to Sacramento. We are marching for same-sex marriage, health care for all, economic justice, gender equality, and racial equality. The march was initiated by One Struggle, One Fight in the aftermath of Proposition 8. Our goal is to build bridges to other communities and movements for justice. We are gay, straight, bisexual, HIV positive, intersex, transgendered, and gender nonconformers. We are secular and people of faith. The March to Sacramento will kick off with festivities in Richmond the evening of March 24th, and we will begin walking the next morning. We will stay in communities along the way and join with them to celebrate our diversity. We will arrive in Sacramento on March 29th and make our voices heard with a day of action. Walk the entire way with us or meet us along the route. Support us in whatever way you can. Join us in the streets as we stamp our message into the earth. Sign up today at onestruggleonefight.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox here on Green 960. We're speaking with Donna Smith, who is also a single-payer healthcare advocate and activist, and she's working in Washington, D.C. right now around this issue. She was in Michael Moore's film Sicko, and I would encourage everybody to see the movie if you haven't, or rewatch it to really get up to speed on this issue. I just believe that, Donna, that it's absolutely incredible that Obama has appointed, you know, Dr. Sanjay Gupta as Surgeon General. And I had a Facebook discussion with some of my friends on Facebook. You can find me, Cindy Sheehan, on Facebook too. But we had a discussion on why don't you just appoint somebody like, you know, one of the doctors from Scrubs or Doogie Howser or something like that. And, you know, then appoint, you know, somebody from Law and Order as your attorney general. It just, you know, Sanjay Gupta is not for medicinal cannabis. He's not for single payer health care. And most of the people in Washington, D.C., except for 35 co-sponsors of H.R. 676, appear to be for the forcing people to buy health care from health insurance companies. And you had a great article in Common Dreams on February 6th about this. Can you fill my listeners in on what is the status of the health care debate in Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. I think we have a couple of things going on right at the moment that are really some troubling, some interesting. I think, first of all, I said in that article, and I feel this often when I'm sitting in meetings in Washington, you feel like you're in a bad benefits meeting. If any of you have ever sat in a bad annual benefits meeting where you're listening to people talk about what's not going to be covered, what will be covered, was that. And in particular, I heard Senator Max Baucus is one of the people who's working on a health care reform plan, and I listened to someone describing what his plan might look like, and they were talking about how we'd have three-tiered coverage. We'd have bronze and silver and gold, and I thought my brain is starting to hurt. I thought, okay, how do you reconcile that with President Obama saying that health care is a human right? Exactly how will we fit people into the bronze human rights category and the silver human rights category and the gold human rights category? And I thought, you don't. If health care is a human right, it's a human right,
and
period.
Why do they always have to stratify us and break us up into classes anyway? And like you said, who deserves less health care and who deserves more?
Absolutely. So that is, there's a large majority, or not a majority, but a large number of people who are kind of going down that pathway, thinking that the only way we can really change this system is by taking on this model where we actually expand the for-profit health insurance system. Now, this is the part of our system that's broken. And what they're doing in their infinite wisdom is talking about expanding that and having all of us buy into it, which for the insurance companies, talk about a bailout.
Yeah,
my
really.
God, wow.
That's a boon.
Woo, big
that's
time.
Boon,
47
yeah.
million more customers
yeah.
right away, immediately, into the pool. And what worries me, obviously, about that is it doesn't say anything about really protecting American citizens like myself. I mean, I feel like I was sold a defective product for all those years, and I feel as though I was bilked. You know, I paid into this system that I expected. It's called insurance, expected to keep me safe, and it did not keep me safe. It didn't.
Right.
I'm not sure how safe it kept my health. Thank God I made it through my cancer.
And how is your husband doing?
He's okay. We're always, thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm.
He's always kind of, we're grateful for times in between crises for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so frustrating to me to listen to people and good people, good, decent people talk about this being the way to fix the system. Many of them will even acknowledge that a single-payer, publicly funded, privately delivered program is a better way to go, but they always follow that with the comment, it's not politically feasible.
Well, it's not feasible to their lobbyists, people who finance their campaigns.
Absolutely.
That's who it's not feasible for.
And then I always remind them, okay, I want to take you back 13 months ago. And if we ran an election 13 months ago between John McCain and Barack Obama would win Illinois and Hawaii. He was not our politically feasible candidate 13 months ago.
Right.
And today he's our president. So I, first of all, I reject that. I tell people I'm kind of like the Pollyanna or something of the single-payer movement, maybe in a weird sort of way, and that I believe we can make this happen. I believe the political will of the people is there. I've talked in enough states to know that people get it. They know the system is broken.
Healthcare providers get it.
They get it.
Yep.
The nurses get it. The
right.
doctors get it. They know it's broken. The only people who don't yet get it for us is our Congress and our president, because we haven't been loud enough yet.
Like you said, we have to keep on advocating for the most perfect solution to all of the problems. As activists, we can do that. We don't have to make compromises. And already in California, we're seeing, and in many states, we're seeing how services are being curtailed because of the economy. And, you know, they can use the excuses that we wanted to do it, but the economy was so bad.
Well, here's what's awesome about the organization I now work for. I now, thank God, I was blessed enough about a year ago to be hired by the California Nurses to advocate for single payer. They're good people. And we just did the first study of its kind that actually showed that if we were to pass single payer, and you can go to our website at calnurses.org and look at it, that if we were to pass single payer today, it actually has an economic stimulus and recovery impact on our nation's economy to the tune of 2.6 million new jobs.
Right.
So instead of being something we cannot do, it is something we ought to be doing for the nation, not just even if you could throw away all the human rights issues in this. If you just wanted to look at purely the financial issues in it, it's still the right way to go for the nation. It's still the best way to go for our people. So I tell people, you know, the California nurses have not only committed their spirits and what they see at the bedside to fighting for this issue, they also have done the econometric work of taking a look at it and saying, look, this is good for the economy, too. This is the right thing to do for the whole nation. The only people it's not the right thing to do is the CEOs of the insurance companies.
Well, yeah, and we've seen how they have such an inordinate influence on our Congress. But we only have a couple minutes left, Donna. Let's talk about what people can do to, first of all, educate themselves more about this issue, and then to join you and other activists like Dr. Newhall in fighting for our rights. And like you said, even if these people are insured, have health insurance, a single-payer system would be much better for them also.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'll give a quick contrast in our own situation. If Larry and I had been covered by a single-payer system, we would have survived. We would have been in our home still. And we would have it would have been tough, but we would have made it through.
Right.
And that's the difference.
And like we said, you could have concentrated on getting healthy and not worrying about bills and money and things that people who are in your situation shouldn't have to worry about. So tell us how we can educate ourselves more on this system.
There's a number of wonderful websites that you can look at to get information from. Fortunately, Michael Moore still puts a good deal of stuff out there, but so too does the California Nurses at GuaranteedHealthcare.org or CalNurses.org. You can use either site to get to single-payer information. You can go to Physicians for a National Health Program. They have PNHP.org. They have a great website with lots of information. I have my own activist organization for patients called American Patients United, and you find us at AmericanPatientsUnited.org, and you can always email me directly right on that site. And I'm very good about responding to folks and getting back to you with information.
She is. She's very quick.
So if you have questions, or of course it does help when I see Cindy Sheehan emailing, I'm like, oh, cool. Very nice. But, you know, and I have to say, Cindy, you what a blessing you are to this world. I know that the tragedy touched you in a much deeper way than it's touched me. You lost your son. You know, I lost stuff. You lost your son. But you have been such an inspiration in your courage and your energy to fight that you give a lot of we other moms and women out there in this society courage to say, no, you know, I may not have a PhD behind my name or an MD, or I may not have got the most money in the world, but I still can fight and speak up for what's right.
Absolutely. And we just need to really work together because the problems are bigger than Donna or Cindy, that's for sure. And so if we can join hands and work together and just make the world a better place for just people, then I'm honored to be your friend and be in that struggle with you. So Donna, thank you for being on. We're out of time. And thanks again, Donna, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you. This is Cindy Sheehan on Green 960. We'll be right back with my soapbox rant, so stay tuned.
Introducing the greatest old-time radio shows of the 20th century, selected by Walter Cronkite. 20 hours of classic radio, including Orson Welles' legendary War of the Worlds.
Call now, 800-622-3488.
I'm Cindy Sheehan with today's Soapbox Rant. I have been curious about the relationship of the bad economy to military recruitment. Since I found out that my son was lied to so profoundly when he was recruited in 2000 for the Army, I have been on a crusade to curtail military recruitment. Case's recruiter made 5 promises to him that he broke, but the worst one was that Casey would never see combat, quote, even if there was a war, end quote. Casey, a Humvee mechanic, was killed 5 days after he arrived in Baghdad in combat. So with the hemorrhaging of jobs in our society and with the horrible economy, 2 recent reports that I have read say that not only is recruitment rising, but so is reenlistment. One soldier who saw a close buddy killed in Iraq reenlisted because he said, at least in the Army you, quote, get a steady paycheck, end quote. One Pentagon official admitted that hard economic times are boon times for the killing industrial complex. Of course, those weren't his words. Those are my words. One of Casey's best friends just enlisted and was promised a $40,000 signing bonus. However, Casey was promised a $20,000 signing bonus, and he only got $4,500 when he finished boot camp. Our friend knows that military recruiters lie, but he is enticed by the promises of so-called riches, and he thinks that Obama is withdrawing troops from Iraq. Like I said to our friend, are you effing kidding me? Obama is already waffling on Iraq troop withdrawal and is maintaining his insistence on sending more troops to Afghanistan, and he's bombing Pakistan to further destabilize the region. Being dead for Obama is just as permanent and wrong as being dead for Bush. Please, if your situation is so bad that you have to allow yourself to be misused, killed, or maimed by the USA and its wars for profit, or some people think even worse, killing innocent people, then please rethink your position. Move in with your parents. Collect bottles and cans. And don't believe the education myth, because according to its own statistics of the Pentagon, less than 20% of veterans use their full education benefits. With this recent economic emergency, schools are suffering the most. And we as peace activists and concerned citizens need to do whatever we can to protect our children from the predatory military recruiters that only exist to earn their bonuses for dragging our children into violence to be used as cannon fodder for the robber class. Our Ask Cindy question today comes from Carrie Olson in Corvallis, Oregon. Carrie says, I have a question for the show. Any update on the guy who threw a shoe at Bush? Well, Carrie, I recently read an article that the shoe thrower, Muntadir Al-Zaidi, turned 30 on January 16th, and he was visited in jail by his brother, and his guards threw him a party. And he hasn't been able to see a reporter or even his lawyer, but he told his brother that he was very humbled that the people of Iraq support him and that there were demos all over the world in solidarity with him. And as a matter of fact, we had one here in San Francisco in front of the federal building. His lawyer is trying to get the charges reduced from assaulting Bush, which carry a 15-year penalty, a 15-year prison penalty, to insulting Bush. And supposedly Al-Zaidi is being tried under the Iraqi penal system, but we all know that the U.S. pulls those strings. Al-Zaidi did an incredibly brave thing, and he had expected to be killed by the Secret Service, who, in my opinion, moved very slowly in reaction to the incident. As one of my friends who has worked in high-level security told me, quote, Al-Zaidi should have had a bullet between his eyes before he even got the second shoe off, end quote. So it makes me wonder why the Secret Service had been so slow in responding to that. Let's keep up to date on this case and not allow Al-Zaidi to languish in prison for doing something that most of the world has wanted to do. Your soapbox action today is to find out if your Congress critter is a co-sponsor of H.R. 676. There's only 35 of them. Two Bay Area Congress people, Lynn Woolsey from Marin and Barbara Lee from across the Bay, East Bay, has signed on to support it. If your Congress critter is not co-sponsoring H.R. 676, you find out why and ask him or her to support it and ask him or her to fight for this basic human right, health care for all. Well, that's the end of our show, but I would like to send a special soapbox shout out to our monthly sustainers. There is a page on the website that lists most of you, and we're working on getting all your names up. We currently have about 100 sustainers. The monthly donation is anywhere from $4 a month to $100 a month. This is your show, and I want you to feel that you have a say and a stake in this show. Please go to CindySheehanSoapbox.com to become a monthly sustainer. We're over halfway to totally supporting the show each month. And this show, like I said, was sponsored very generously by my first guest, Clark Newhall. I would again like to thank you for tuning back in, my listeners. I would like to thank my guest, Clark Newhall, and Donna Smith, and always my engineer, Scott Cuddy. Don't forget to send your Ask Cindy questions or soapbox rants to me at Cindy@CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Tune in next week when we have a really special soapbox here on Green 960 or Green960.com, when we'll be talking to Los Angeles District Attorney or former Los Angeles District Attorney Vincent Bugliosi about prosecuting George W. Bush for murder. This is Cindy Sheehan, always speaking truth to power. Peace out.